Hello, everyone. This is Judy-Anne McNamara, the founder of MISH, the Montreal Institute of Classical Homeopathy, an international school of leading-edge holistic homeopathy that has been in operation since 2005. I recorded a podcast for Eugenie's holiday special about what the latest research reveals on how homeopathic remedies work, as well as a bit on the MISH method, which was developed to take advantage of those revelations. In this second podcast, Adam Fjord, a MISH homeopath and naturopath, a MISH teacher and clinical supervisor with over a decade of clinical experience, illustrates the MISH method and provides important hints about child case taking with a very interesting pediatrics case. I hope you enjoy it, as well as the holiday season. Just so that you know, our website is michmontreal, all in one word, .com. You'll find interesting blog articles. You can subscribe to our newsletter, email us at info@michmontreal.com, or follow us on Instagram. So now, here is the case.
Children are the next generation, and I think that's always been my interest in working with children. Also, this is a classical homeopathy webinar. You know what, Mish, that's not all that we teach, but today I'm talking about from that angle, from that bias. So from that ideal bias, et cetera, planting the seeds of homeopathy in the next generations. I mean, what a beautiful thing to do. A lot of people who come and see us have experienced homeopathy. It might come from other places around the world where they grew up with it, and that's lovely. And they come back because they know that it worked for them when they were young. The whole teachings around pediatrics, I'm going to do a short summary, and then we're going to go into a case. So basically, the same principles apply to both children and adults. We need to deeply understand the individual. And we need to understand the challenge that they're facing. And this is the principle that you're going to hear over and over again about susceptibility and adaptability. And it's one of the key things I do when I'm using classical homeopathy with kids is I always have the question in my head, what can this child not adapt to? How can we help this child adapt? That's the main thing. If I can't answer that question, then I can't suggest a remedy. The main things, as you see here, child case taking considerations, obviously there's a lot. And if you're once again new to the program, you're going to learn all about this. Don't worry about it. And if you've already gone through it, a little reminder, you'll see at the very, very top, we have susceptibility. And then I would say 2 to 5, it depends on the case. Every case is different. In some cases, the milestones are really key. In some cases, the disposition is key. Physical constitution might be important. The pregnancy of the mother may or may not be key. Coming back to what Chantel asked, which is when you have young children and you're taking the pregnancy history of the mother, how do you know what's important or what's part of the mother's case, if you will, and what's the child? And as I was saying to Chantel, it's a beautiful question. It's a very advanced question. I will give you an example today in the case that I'm going to show you. The last thing, susceptibility, you're going to see that most easily through any exciting factors. We might also call that etiologies, any cravings, aversions, any fears. We're always going to be observing the child when and where possible, how they move. We know that movement is energy and homeopathy is energy. Is energy. It's an energetic medicine. So what's energy? Energy is at the dimension of subtle. You can't see it. It's symbolic. It's archetypal. It's what things represent. And so when you want to use classical homeopathy, you're going to be using about things that you can observe. You'll see what those are in the case today, but also things that are like symbolic metaphors. So as you know, the level of metaphors, pictures, symbols, as ifs are key. Any drawings, anything creative you could do with a child is amazing, you know. So those are just a quick summary. So I thought what I'd do is I would show you a case. And unfortunately, Well, unfortunately, ideally it would be a video case. It's not, it's a paper case. you know, paper cases are definitely a little bit more difficult because we can't see and feel the child's movement. So I'll describe to you a little bit what happened here. It's a 6-year-old child, and then I'll share the notes on my screen. And once again, if you're very new, just try and follow along. When we meet with a child, and here I'm using that term very in a very broad sense, right? I mean, you know, is it two? You know, so I'm speaking in this case about a 6-year-old. When I hope to do my webinar series, we're going to sort of divide it into, you know, different groups to make, you know, because there's different ways to case take depending on the age of the child. Anyhow, with a 6-year-old, for those of you who've already gone through the program, you know from anthroposophy that the child has what we say like individuated. I would say it happens much earlier. I mean, my daughter's sense of ego was very clear at 3. Her sense of identity was really strongly coming in at 3, 4. They're starting, you know, to separate from that energetic connection with you know, primarily mother, and show their own flavor, their own susceptibilities, you know, and we see that very young. But basically, when a child is 5 or 6, if you can sit down with them, that'd be fantastic. So as part of the consult, I don't always do that. That's a little bit more advanced, but it depends on the situation. But as much as possible, I'd like to, or when and where possible, sit down with child. I'm not picky. I'm super flexible in my cases. If parents are there, great. I just basically say whatever makes the child happy, you know, so I'm not a dogmatic. You're not going to hear that from me. I really kind of just try and roll with it and trust that whatever happens is what needs to happen. And the dynamic and what they're susceptible to is always there. Some people feel differently, but it doesn't seem to, in my opinion, make too big of a difference. So in this, what I'm going to be showing you is a case where a single remedy was used. Sometimes that's referred to as classical homeopathy, but basically, you know, trying to prescribe a remedy based on the totality of symptoms, but more important, the overall dynamic and the child on as many levels as possible. If you can understand that, then you can choose a single remedy with everything that you've learned or will be learning at Mish. The advantage is that it is the, in my opinion, you know, I wouldn't say the best, but very powerful way to help the child adapt on all levels. You'll see what I mean, where we see changes physically, mentally, emotionally, and I'd say even energetically. All the other approaches are super valid, and I use all cell salts, complexes, GMO, any. It's all super, super valid. And sometimes I start the case like that. Sometimes I don't. It just depends. It's just really flexibility. So I really encourage flexibility in approach. And we don't know what the situation needs, which is also like a really holistic and classical approach. If we can do it with a minimum dose and a single dose, then let's go for that. And if not, sometimes the child needs many other things. And so, but today, as I said, we're just really going to be looking at what happens when we try and use a single remedy. So we have action on all levels, and a really good simillimum should cover your forces. For those of you who've already gone through the program, forces is the evaluation, how we evaluate whether or not a case is working or not. So when I was saying, if you don't know what the child is having difficulty adapting to, in my opinion, you can't give a remedy. Like a classical remedy, you have to say, what does the child have? If you can really name what the child is having difficulty adapting to, then you can fill in the forces. And at Mish, that's an acronym. The F stands for freedom. The O stands for objectivity, et cetera. And those letters in that word, we evaluate them with parents to find out if the child is doing better. So I'll show you that in this case. So what happened here is I sat with a 6-year-old and the case was taken via Zoom. I sat with the child and mom for about, I don't know, 20, 25 minutes. And then I sat with just mom. I also used the intake form pretty thoroughly In most cases, I'll try and show you that at the end, and I've made some adjustments to my intake form. I'll try and share that with you. So this boy was 6 years old, and he sat there, and he was looking at me, and he sat quite still, and he had fair skin and light blonde hair. His average weight and height for his age. And he wasn't moving very much, and he seemed to be, fairly obedient, if I could put it that way. You know, his mom never had to say, sit back down or anything like that, which is very, very difficult on Zoom, as you can imagine. So sometimes what I do on, if it's a Zoom case, is I will say, I usually try and speak to the mom one-on-one or the parent or the guardian at some point one-on-one. And I say, describe how your child would have walked into my office. Ideally, they coming into a physical office. And so when that's not possible, you just have the parent tell you. The parent knows. And so coming back to your question, Chantel, when you're asking parents for information, more often than not, I use a lot of the information. And unless there's a real reason why my kind of inner meter tells me that I don't know about what they're saying, and I find that's more rare than common. And so, for example, would the child have their head down? Would the child come straight up to you? Is the child looking at you? Is the child behind mom? Is the child racing and pulling off your books off? So this is the movement. This is the energy of the child. In very simple terms, is the child like an externally, like they're just moving freely, or they're more internal, external or internal? And so this child was sort of still and close to mom, but not hiding behind mom. And, you know, he was sitting there on his own, but he wasn't moving around. He didn't need to be disciplined or anything like that. So that tells us something right away about the child, and it eliminates hundreds of remedies. So even if we're just thinking about 150, 200 polycrests for children, which is also what I tend to do. I'll say that now. I am of the bias that why not try and use those remedies that we know super well? When you go outside the box, it's wonderful, and we often have to. But more often, in my opinion, we don't have to. So I'm not going to go start thinking in numbers and advanced systems, and that just throws you off the mark. Just stay with the energy of the child. So right here, the child's not aggressive. The child's not destructive. The child's not outward in his energy. You just eliminated all the spider remedies, any of those remedies, just done, forget it. There's no way you're going to give that remedy to that child. It's not going to help. No matter what kind of fears they have or anything like that, it would be very rare. Even if the child says they're getting chased, they don't like spiders, as an example. But this is a calm child. And so you'll see, and then obviously whatever we observe, whatever hypothesis you observe needs to be confirmed by the parent. And then that's when it's what I call a solid symptom. So in this case, as per the mom, and I can share all this with you after, obviously this is going to be a lot of information, but just do your best to follow. Try and keep it simple. The mom said that the child is having a lot of anger and frustration. He has a younger sister who I also met, and I would agree with what the mom says. She's quite aggressive. She was one who needed much more of a spider type of remedy, and she would bully him. So here's an example of the child is having difficulty adapting to a sibling who has a different energy than him. He doesn't have that energy at all. The other child does. There's other siblings. He can't handle it. The other siblings don't like how she's reacting, but they're not stuck. This child is stuck. That's what you need to hear. Oh, the child's stuck. He can't handle this outside energy. Okay, which means he can't adapt to it. What does the remedy have to do? It has to give him different ways to adapt to his sister. We're not, you know, so it. That's the piece that you need to hear there, right? So it's not about whether his sister's behavior is right, wrong, good, bad, whether they need to do something about that is not what we're talking about. Okay. Now, yes, that's important. It might be an ongoing maintaining cause we like to use, but why? So he's got, I think, four or five siblings. The other siblings are They just walk away from the younger child when she has her tantrums. This kid can't walk away. He gets really affected. Oh, susceptibility, he can't adapt. He's got two options. When a child has two options, or when anybody has two options, it's going to be a problem. It's going to lead to symptoms. So that's what you need to listen to your case. They only got one or two options there. They can't adapt. Those things mean the same thing. You know, that you can't miss those parts in your case. And his two options is that he gets really, really frustrated. And either he screams and sobs, or you'll see a little later on, he feels really like he's the problem. He has a lot of, he thinks he's the problem, feels guilty and cries, or he'll internalize his anger and stomp his feet and sometimes get stubborn. But that's it. That's all he can do. And this has been going on for a long time, you know. You start to say, oh, well, that's interesting. What's going on there? How come this child doesn't have any other options? So enforces, that's your F. He's got no freedom of response. He's got two options. That's not freedom. That's the opposite of freedom. So adaptability, you need to have a lot of different ways to deal with life because life is challenging. That's adaptability, and child doesn't. So let's see more specifically what happens. I'm not going to go into this part too much. He does have a speech apraxia. And the main thing there is that he goes into the same kind of reaction. He gets very, very frustrated. He's got a speech pathologist. He gets very frustrated with himself and kind of internalizes his anger. The mother wrote this. These are all the words here are the patient or mother's exact words. She said he bites his nails so bad that they've been reduced by a full third. And in the last 2 months, he's even started chewing his toenails. When I took the case from the health history form and from my own questioning, this is what I summarized as being very important. The mother said remember, he's 6 years old. The mother said from age 2 to 9, he was always chronically ill. He always had a cold. And then he was sort of like weak. He would get sick very easily. They noticed, and this is not a pro or con against vaccination at all. I am extremely, I don't have strong feelings about it. It happened to be in this case. I don't think they're bad. I don't think they're good. They're necessary for many people. I don't, in my practice, have a strong opinion against them in any way, to be frank. However, in homeopathy, if you look in the history of homeopathy and you look, and you know, you're going to see a lot of extreme beliefs, and that's fine. It's not the way I roll, but I do think, like anything else, like a child can be extremely susceptible to the sun. A child can be extremely susceptible to vaccine. A child can be susceptible to anything. So it's no different. So in this particular case, it was evident, okay? And I'm naming that because it can lead to a lot of polarized thinking. So just FYI, try and stay away from that. In my own practice, maybe consider doing the same. In this case, it was important. The parents recognized that after his first three vaccines, this particular child had a very, very strong reaction to all of them. And he had very bad eczema, extreme swelling in the legs, and it was very evident. And now they have other children. The other children didn't respond poorly to vaccines. And why? Because they didn't have that type of susceptibility, in my opinion. This child did. Because he did, it's important. Now, I don't make the correlation the vaccines are good or bad. I just say the child is susceptible to vaccines. And then you got to understand it dynamically within the whole case. Remember, we already said he's susceptible to his younger sister's energy. He's susceptible to vaccines. He gets sick often, and he changes the temperature. Wait a minute. What's common between all those three things is what you should be asking yourself. And so that's homeopathy. What's common? What's the child's state? What's his dynamic? How come he's so susceptible to those three things? Okay, so that's how you need, you know, can encourage you to think that way. You'll see he tends towards being nervous and anxious. So when I start taking the case, you ask about his susceptibility. What I recommend is you just get to know the child. Just have fun. Kids are amazing. They're so much fun. So feel their energy. Watch closely. Generally, what I do is I'm not even that concerned to get a lot of information off the top. I just want to watch a child. I want to see where they go. This child didn't really, in my opinion, go any place very interesting, you know? And this is obviously this is a summary of the case, but just to give you a sense of how it kind of played out, I was like, oh, hey, tell me about you. It's so nice to meet you. What do you love? I want to know what you love. You know, he's 6 years old. So how old is this child and how are you going to connect with them? You know, a 9-year-old, I might not take that approach, but a 6-year-old, I want to get him excited, you know, if I can. I want to get him excited. Oh, it's so great to meet you. And you're with your mom. That's so cool. Whoa. And you're, you know, like, this is so nice. And tell me about you. I want to know all about you, and mom's going to help. You just make a game out of it, you know, get in the mind of a child. And then, oh yeah. Okay, cool. This, you know, this sounds like fun. And he's all in. So he talked to me about, you know, 15 minutes about playtime with his sisters and games and favorite books and drinks and foods. And then I asked about his appetite. And this is where you can get just a general energy of the child. Sometimes some things are really peculiar. Sometimes they're not. So you just got to be patient. The mom says something here that, in my opinion, was really important. I said, Mom, how about you tell me about your child? And, well, what's so special about this child? And she said, he's super detailed. This child is extremely precise with everything. He always takes his time. He really likes number stuff, math. He loves math and numbers, but he has a hard time with letters. And he's seen a speech therapist. And now I go a step deeper and I want to see, I'm just feeling into how does this child respond to the world around him? Okay. Because I'm just thinking about how does he adapt? So in new environments, how is he in a new environment? What happens when he goes to the grocery store? What happens when he goes to school? What happens if he's got to go to a doctor's office? And the mom says, nowadays he says hi to kids, but with adults, he always waits. And he used to be very shy and reserved when he was younger. So this tells us something again about the child. So you're observing this in the child, you know, he's sitting there. He's like, I kind of use that word obedient, if you will. The mom says, you know, he's got a tendency to be shy and reserved. Here's where you can ask for examples. The more examples you have, the stronger your symptom is. Okay. So there's a lot of examples in this case that the child is shy, reserved. He can get a little bit anxious and anticipate when things are coming, get a little bit nervous if there's something the next day. And if there's a new environment, you know, it takes a little bit to warm up. He's not painfully shy, but he's a little unsure of himself. Okay. He's not going to go into the room and like just start doing things. He's got to warm up. So once again, you just eliminated a ton of remedies. You can't give the child a restless remedy, a hyperactive remedy. It's not going to work. No matter what other symptoms are there, it's not who the child is. So I say, tell me about him as a baby. How is he different than your other children? And the mom said he was a relaxed and easy baby. He loved to be cuddled, loved being held. But she said he would always get hot easily. And whenever he'd get hot, like in the summer or something like that, his energy would get zapped. And then he would be really fussy at that time. She said he was born with good health. His vitals were all good. He nursed well, but then they realized that he had a tongue tie and that they had to add some formula. So I asked about his energy getting zapped. And I said, does that still happen? Now, you could have asked any question you wanted at that time. The reason why I went there is because homeopathy is about energy, it's vitality, the vital force. I want to know what zaps this kid's energy. And remember, as a child, he was sickly. He got sick all the time. So now I see, oh, those two things go together. Child's getting sick all the time. He's got a weak constitution, frequent colds, etc. And now he gets easily sick. Easily loses his energy. Perfect. So I want to know, does he, and the word, you know, energy getting zapped, I just thought it was the most interesting thing that she said. And I asked for an example. Always ask for examples. Okay. And if they can't give you a good example, then ignore it. But here she said, oh, yeah, for sure. Like, you know, if we go on a hike, anytime he overexerts himself, if it's summer, he gets too hot, he gets tired easily. His stamina is low. He gets tired quickly. And he can also get nightmares if it's too hot. So once again, now you start having a global symptom, a global dynamic. You need a remedy for hypothetically, you might be. And now, obviously, when you're taking the case, you might not be making these connections in real time, and that's fine. You might be making this in your analysis after they leave and you look at the case. Okay. Now I'm showing you the things that came together. They didn't all come together for me in the moment. These are things that after I say, okay, I got a couple ideas for the remedy. Let me just reflect on that and I'll get back to you. And then, you know, this is when we analyze a case. I'm just making these connections for you now in real time. So from here, she brings up an interesting thing. She says the child gets nightmares when he gets too hot. Now, remember, this child's six. Children at the age 5, 6, they got crazy imaginations. They scared him, not all of them, but many of them, just their minds, you know, a lot of fear is very common. But I did see it as an opportunity to shift levels. Now, for the newer students, the map you're going to be learning is a map of different levels and different dimensions. And so here, for the students who've been here for a while, here clearly we can drop down possibly into the delusion level. And that's where you want to go at some point in your case. So I said, why not? Let's do that. You just wait. And then there's the opportunity. So you change levels, ask about fears and dreams. So here I asked the boy, oh, can you tell me about what you dream about? As you know, through your training, there's a million ways to ask this question. You could ask what they wouldn't want to dream about, what they do dream about, what they would most love to dream about, what they would, you know, et cetera. In this case, I don't remember exactly what I said, but basically, you know, tell me about what you dream about and do you have nightmares type of thing. And this is a summary of what the boy said, but these are his exact words. He talked about wolves and then a wolf and then me and my mom are in the woods and this wolf comes and then I cry for mom and then in the dream I run away. I said, okay, and you have any other dreams or fears? And he said, T-Rex, there's a T-Rex and he takes me out of the house. And then he had another dream about these big, horrible owls that are very bad. And it was at this time that the mom kind of spontaneously reiterated, oh, you know, yeah, he's a very cautious and methodical child in reference to like how he was sharing the stuff about the dreams. So I thought, oh, that's interesting. Remember, anything that is really spontaneous that comes up in a case that's spontaneous, that's emphasized, is sometimes very important. In this case, you have a theme. You have a theme. Once again, she's talking about the child's nature. Remember earlier on, she talked about the child, being very detailed, precise. And so here, remember synonyms. You know, detailed, precise, methodical. This is the child's energy. He's detailed. He's precise. He's cautious. He's methodical. So now, if we're just thinking about polycress as a homeopath, oh, your life just got way easier. You're down to, if you just want to go with 100 remedies, you got a handful that are methodical, precise, orderly. Okay, so this is one way to work your cases. And then I was more curious. Now, we could have gone into dreams and all this stuff, but, you know, sometimes I say the child's six. The mom isn't telling me that nightmares are a huge problem. She's not telling me the child's terrified at night. So we could go into dreams, and most of you, I think, would, and at times I would have, but you don't always have to go into dreams and sensation. Yay, with kids' cases, I'm going to say that again. You don't always have to go into the deeper dimensions. What you need to be addressing is what the child is susceptible to. The mom isn't saying, my child is terrified. He's scared of everything. I can't leave his room at night. It takes me an hour to put him to bed. And then he cries. And if it was that kind of child, I would have spent as much time as possible at the delusion level. Okay. But in this case, the child has some dreams about some bad owls and like, yeah, okay. I have some really weird dreams too. So you have to have it in the context of the case. And remember, the child's six. So I didn't even go there. I wanted to know more about what happens with your sister and to see if he could like tell me anything about what's happening inside of him so I could feel his energy, because that's really what he was so affected by. The boy says, you know, sometimes it's just too much for me. She calls me mean stuff and it really hurts. And at that time, I like cry and I scream. And I tried to ask him a little bit more about that. And what does that feel like in your body? And that's pretty tough stuff for a six-year-old to answer. This child couldn't really answer that. Some kids can. So I asked the mom, I said, what else does she notice at that times? And when, in other words, imagine you're in that situation and paint a picture for me. Describe to me what he does, you know? And the mom says, well, he could also get very angry and stomp and say no to her, but mainly he internalizes that. I asked a couple other questions about that, but that was kind of the most important thing. I wanted to ask about the biting of nails. The mom said it's pretty much every day. It started when he was 3 or 4 years old, and it mainly started with his sister bullying him. So here you go. That's the, once again, what can the child not adapt to is his sister's bullying energy. And now this is really key, because when a child can't adapt to something, and then they start having a particular behavior, sometimes that's a really key symptom. And so what I would say is, where else does a child bite his nails? Give me specific examples, and so that would have been my next question, because I want to ground myself, is how important is that symptom? How important is that expression? And where is that coming from? What's the principal emotion that child has when they're biting their nails? Is that out of boredom? Is that out of nervousness? When is that? When else is it happening? Where is that coming from? So, you know, is it fear? Is it anger? Where is that coming from? And in this case, what came up was the other examples was the child would tend to bite, you know, when he was unsure of himself, basically. And he wasn't sure about himself. So when something angered him, like his sister, but he didn't know what to do about it, but also in public sometimes when he'd get kind of stressed and a little bit nervous about things that were new, he'd start really biting his nails. Now, obviously it's become a very bad habit, but now the, you know, I've never heard this in a case, and it's not, you know, it's going to be something that it's a very strong keynote, possibly, is how I would think about that. So if it's a strong keynote or a strong symptom, you need to qualify it. It needs to be grounded in something. And ideally, it needs to be global. So here it's grounded that it's you have the qualities of how intense it is. It comes up with nervousness and anticipation. And it comes up with emotional stuff when he can't deal with his sister being aggressive to him. So at this point, I thank the boy, or however I'd say, you know, so nice meeting you, and just, you know, give him all the good feelings I can give that child. And then I ask him if it'd be okay if I spoke to his mom a little bit, you know, stuff like that. Obviously, I told the mom this ahead of time, that we're going to kind of be flexible, see how it goes, but that today's going to be a little bit of a mix about, yeah, I'd like to sit together at some point, I'd like to talk to you. And so that's what happened. Now, one of the things, coming back to your question, Chantel, in general, specifically, how can you, when with younger kids, how do you use the information of the parent? I'd say with prudence, but as I said before, I do use a lot of the information. I tend to use more, if I'm using the information, I want it to be qualified. I'm going to ask for examples, always. If they can't give me good spontaneous examples, kind of falls flat. If the parent is emphasizing it, it's important. They live with the child every day. If the parent says it's important, it's important. You got to understand, why is it important? Why are they bringing that up? Now, yes, occasionally the parent has their own susceptibility that you can hear, and that there's something in them is a little bit out of balance. But parenting's hard. So don't worry about that. Don't worry about trying to take the parent's case. You can do that separately, but here we're talking about the child. So that's what I'd focus on. Just stay with the child's energy, get them to tell you more and more and more. And the stronger it becomes a pattern, then it's an important symptom. So here, I didn't feel that I could go over Zoom to the metaphorical level of child. So I went there with mom. Now, I also worked with mom, and I had a sense that mom is able to go inside. She's able to give images, and she really is energetically in touch with her children. And I'd say most parents very much are. And so we're going to use that. So you'll see what I did here is I asked the mom, I said, let's sink into your child, but energetically, dynamically, like inside, you know? And what I always tell patients and parents there is to, you know, the more abstract, the more that it's, you know, kind of, it doesn't need to make sense, that I want them to give me images and pictures. And so what I sometimes say is like, energetically, imagine you're your child, or imagine your child, you know, enter your child's energy, go into their energy. You could speak for your child, you know, and or if you imagine being with that child, how is that child different than your other children? Well, you know, and so parents usually are really wonderful at answering that. And here's what she said. Oh, he's, you know, so she felt into that. And she said, he's joyful. He's calm. He's peaceful. He wants to make others laugh. He likes to be in connection with friends. He's very compassionate, very caring. He likes to be nurturing to his siblings, and he likes to take care of things. And he likes to grow plants too, is basically what she said. So what a beautiful thing to say about your child, right? Now, what I think is that's absolutely wonderful, but there's nothing out of balance in that. So that's great. It doesn't tell me anything that is different than what I kind of perceived and what I heard. And I could see all of that. And that's great. And that's where we want the child to be. We want him to be there as much as possible, just in that energy. But that's not the remedy. It once again tells you that he doesn't need a destructive energy. Remedies, yeah, remedy that's destructive, whatever, or terrified, doesn't need a terrified remedy or an angry remedy, but that's beautiful. And so I'm not going to spend a lot of time there because I say that's lovely. And I kind of want to go more to where the child is having difficulty adapting, right? Because you got to give them, if you want to give a remedy, and that's what this webinar is about, I'm not going to spend time there. So I didn't spend time there. I said, what does the remedy have to do? Like, in other words, if we give your child a remedy, what could it help him with? What would make the biggest change for him? And that's kind of a more general way of asking, what does the remedy need? You could say, what does the remedy need to help your child adapt to? Because that's all I'm thinking that anyway. So I just want the parent to be thinking about that too. Because that is homeopathy. Can they not adapt to? That's, okay. So growing plants, beautiful. He doesn't need to adapt to growing plants. He's already doing that. That's great. Being caring, nurturing, compassionate. Great. He's got that. But I needed to hear more about the other stuff. And she gave me a great answer. She said, the problem is that he just gets so angry. He breaks down. He sobs. He's got these hot, hot tears. He gets all red in the face. And it's as if he's sad and hurt, and he immediately absorbs what others say. And that was really, really key. So she was feeling into, I said, feel into that energy. Imagine you're your son. And she said, it's as if he absorbs what other people say. And she said, actually, it can happen with anybody. It can also happen with his dad and his friend. Bingo. Global. So newer students, you want to take your cases to the global level to give a classical remedy. You don't have to. You can go on superficial keynotes. But the Mish method, when we want to try and give a remedy at the deepest level possible, it needs to be global. Global means that the child has the same reaction in different situations that are not related. Okay, so the dad obviously is not having a tantrum and being aggressive with his son. The dad is saying, you know, hey, can you put down that book and, you know, help me get the, and the child will you know? So, or with his friend says, no, I want to do it my way. And the child goes into the same state. And that's the state that the remedy has to address. So now we need to fill in the state, because all we're really getting is some emotional stuff. But she said a very important word, in my opinion, because it's dynamic and it's a word of movement. He immediately, and this shows that he has, it's like a reflex. Okay. So no freedom of response, zero freedom of response. He immediately absorbs things. Absorbing is that things get taken in. He takes in, he absorbs. Okay. So that's your dynamic there. He takes in what other people say. And I said, okay, just stay there. Tap into your son's energy. Imagine you're him. Imagine you're him. But very importantly, right in that moment, where his dad or his friend or his sister is doing their thing. And just imagine you're him. Just talk about whatever comes up spontaneously, but try and give me an image. And here's what the mom says. Okay, she says, I'm imagining in a field of wheat, and that somebody is slashing the wheat down. The inner feeling is that it's as if I'm cut down, or that he's cut down. It's as if I'm cut down. It's as if I'm hurt. I got a blow. I got a shock to my system. And any mean words from anybody around me can do this. Now, it takes a lot of, training for those of you who are a little bit earlier in the program, to kind of know what to do with that kind of information. But this is the level of image, and what a beautiful image, And so this is the metaphorical level, the energetic level. So she, and this is coming back to your question, Chantel. So often what I do is, or if I have a child who can't speak for themselves for any number of reasons, autism spectrum, just being too young, whatever it is, I have the mother narrate in the first person. I said, imagine you're your child, right in that, go right into his energy, right in that moment and it's as if what? And it's so beautiful what's shared. And so once again, she says, it's as if someone's slashing, like you're wheat stock, and you're getting slashed down, you're getting hurt. So here we have the dynamic. Things outside me come into me. I absorb them. They shock me. They hurt me. They cut me down. And then he's left with the feeling, and this is more the mental emotional level. This is the metaphorical delusion level, dynamic level. This is the mental emotional level. He internalizes it. He thinks, what did I do? Feels it's his fault. He did something wrong, feels sad, feels guilty. And that he feels hurt and frustrated, and he walks away, and sometimes he pouts and sometimes he cries, but he can't kind of do much more than that. Okay. So this is the case. So now I say, wonderful, or time's up. Now, there's many, many things that can be done right now. You take for students who are earlier on, and even if you're not earlier on, and I often do this, I might want to see the child again. You absolutely don't get rid of the ideal that you're going to come to this kind of a remedy after one consult. Okay. That's not, just let that go. Okay. It doesn't need to be that way. You just meet the child. There's many, many different approaches. You're going to learn all those approaches. In this approach, and just because we're learning, it's just fun. Sort of see, well, what was the remedy? What did the remedy do? So let me show you what the remedy did, and then we're going to learn about the remedy, okay? So now this child's been on this remedy. It happens to be for 2 years. That's not always the case either. Sometimes the child just needs the remedy a few times. They move through it, and they go to their next stage. Sometimes the child needs the remedy for a much longer time. That's much more advanced conversation. But there's no... there's no one way. In this case, I'll show you what happened in the first month or two, and then I'll tell you what happened now. It's been 2 years. So the child got a single dose of the remedy in 200. I usually ask for an email update from parents. And around, you know, it depends. Sometimes day five, sometimes day 10. It just depends on the type of situation. This is what the mom says on day 17. So she says, he seems to be doing very well in the remedy. I actually don't see his fingers in his mouth. In the first 10 days, he only had one instant of feeling like something was his fault. And before, it was happening every day. Okay. So you always have to say, well, how often was it happening? It was happening daily. Now it's once in 10 days. And so she says, overall, his emotional state improved by 50%. Thank you for helping my children, et cetera, which is, you know, obviously the type of email that, you know, gives you motivation to continue in your work. And that's wonderful. On day 31, usually I would have met with the parent before. In this case, I didn't. I don't quite remember why, but nonetheless, she says, okay, I think we're on the right remedy. And this mother has used homeopathy for a long, long time. So I really trust her intuition. She says, I actually had to cut his toenails today for the first time in years, and his fingernails are looking better as well. And he hasn't had any unexpressed unwarranted guilt in the last week or two. Okay, so then I recommended another dose of the 200. I then had a follow-up after another month. And this is in person. So this is just a very short summary. This is a patient's words, and this is the forces, our evaluation technique, where we ask for percentages. So the theme of guilt and emotion, 75% better. Fingernails growing, he's not chewing them nearly as much, 80% better. Vitality, remember, homeopathy is an energetic medicine, about energy. He was able to play in the heat because now this was the middle of summer. He's getting way less tired. He seems much less sensitive to heat, 50% better. Speech. He is, she said, trying to enunciate faster than before, but he's still getting frustrated. And she would say that there's no change. So at this point, I say, fantastic. I think we have a really, really good match. We just need to give it more time. I changed the potency because there's changes on every level, but the speech hasn't changed. Would I expect to see the speech change with the 200? It depends on the case, but I'm not surprised that it didn't. We just give it more time. So you would give him an MK in this type of case. And then eventually we went to the 10M, and the child has improved on all levels. It's been 2 years. He's doing wonderful. Obviously, there's times when he struggles like any other child. He's in the world. But basically, I just checked in with the mom before this webinar and like a week or two ago as I was preparing this. And she said, actually, he asked me last night to send you a message to say thank you. And when I asked him for what, he said, for all the remedies that help us, like the family, which is interesting because I helped the family and he doesn't think about just himself. He thinks about the family. It's interesting. And the mom had just given him the remedy 2 days ago. But basically, they said he's doing really, really well. The way that, you know, if they're not sure, they're going to email me. But usually they need to know he needs a redose if he's in a major transition and if he starts biting his nails again because he completely stopped. And his speech improved and et cetera. Obviously, he's getting speech therapy, which is wonderful. And the homeopathy improved his emotional frustration. Say, if you're getting that stuck and emotional and frustrated, how are you going to be calm, relaxed, and learn? So this is how it works, you know, in conjunction with other therapies. The child's whole inner state relaxes, they can learn. Okay, so either, you know, we homeopathy can't do it all, but it's a beautiful, you know, complement to many other approaches from that perspective. Because the speech therapy is not going to address his frustration and his shutting down. The homeopathy is, so now he's relaxed, he's open, he's not feeling like I did something wrong, da, da, da. And he can learn. So it's not about the remedy at all. I mean, obviously, I can tell you the remedy, it's fun, whatever, we'll learn a little bit. But what I wanted to get across today, hopefully, is just kind of more the approach to revisit some of the key ways that we take a case, inspire you about kids' cases, and hopefully when I'm presenting, I'm giving you some ideas about what to do and stuff like that and how to take the case deeper. I know there's a lot of specific questions, but today's a little bit more general. So, you know, for some of the students who are just starting, really don't worry about what the remedy is. The key thing is about adaptability. That you, the main take home today is that you understand what is the child not able to adapt to. And you start to hear, oh man, homeopathy can do that. It can address the nail. Has it addressed the nail? How does he stop the behavior of biting nails? How does he get way less? How does that even happen? You know? And so that's why you're at Mish. So welcome. You got a number of years to help answer that question. And, but really, you know, it addresses the inner state. When the inner state is addressed, the child, his whole inner energy, his whole nervous system just relaxes with the world around him. He relaxes with the world around him. And then he has more freedom of response. And it's really a beautiful thing. And so when and where possible, when we can approach cases in this way, this is a very good approach. Any ideas what kingdom we might go to now for some of the students, and just some ideas? Just love to hear from you guys. I'm going to go about 10, 15 minutes over. I apologize. If you have to leave at 12, email me and I can send you the recording of the last 10, 15 minutes. There's no right or wrong answer. Where would you go? What comes up to your mind?
Maybe plant, because of plant? The great sensitivity to it, external world.
Okay, great. So lots of plant ideas. Anything else?
I will stay with the mineral.
Henry's saying minerals. How come, Henry?
I see that it's more about the structure of the key.
Okay, very good. So Henry's saying that, very good. Yeah, so it's more about the structure and what the child is able to do or not do in terms of his own development.
Yeah, it's not about how he reacts. It's how he stays in focus, yes? It's more about what kind of tools he has to react or to respond, for example, for his sister. And it's not more about it's not the issue of the reactivity. Yeah.
Yeah. Very interesting. Good. Yeah. So very good. So basically, in terms of the basic kingdoms, if we don't go too outside the box, we'd eliminate animals and nozodes. For newer students, you're going to learn all about this. I know I keep saying that. Just try and follow. But basically, here we'd be thinking about, okay, like what could be a mineral remedy or a plant remedy in homeopathy. Very good. And I would say keep those both. So that's great. So you have two good options. You've eliminated half of the map if you're thinking through kingdoms. Okay. So that's one way to approach the case. Okay. Through kingdoms. One of the difficulties there is, in terms of the plants, if you go down that road, is that there's no sensation level. Okay. So that's going to be hard. There's a little bit where the mom said, you know, he gets cut down. It's like cut down, like the wheat that gets cut down, the blow and the hurt. But that's really all you got to go on. So you can go to ranunculaceae, ranunculale, like, you know, compositae. Remember, if you're thinking compositae or stuff like that, that's way too advanced. Compositae is row 6 remedies, okay? So just forget about it. That's not going to work. This child is not that... the row 6 remedies are about autonomy, authority, power, leadership, responsibility, pressure. No, this child's not there at all. So those types of remedies, those plant remedies aren't going to work. So that's when, if you start using Sankaran schema with this kind of case, you might give the wrong remedy. So I wouldn't use it. And that's often what I would recommend, you know, so with child's case, you better be flexible. And if anything, I might a little bit go down Henry's thinking, which is, okay, I can't really go with the plants because I don't have enough sensation, and I can't use any of the advanced plant maps, in my opinion, because once again, it's not really about being emotionally wounded, emotionally hurt. Yes, the child gets hurt emotionally, but that's not the whole dynamic in the whole case. Generally speaking, the plants get shocked. They're so sensitive. They're emotionally hurt. And then there's a lot of sensations. And then you go to the plants. You know, here, if we look at the whole dynamic in the case, it'd be hard. You know, there'd be some things we need to overlook to go to the plants, basically. So, for example, what I was emphasizing, the child's nature. child's methodical, that child's orderly, the child's cautious, the child likes numbers, the child takes his time, that, you know, these types of things. Okay, so let me show you kind of what happened there. Just one second. Okay, I'm going to give you a quick little summary about key points, and then I'll show you the remedy, and then we'll talk about today. So the key points here, homeopathy is dynamic, kids are dynamic, so the you got to, as best as possible, be thinking dynamically. Dynamically, you know, I was saying, like, is at that level. Remember that stalk of wheat that absorbs everything. Suddenly, it absorbs, everything comes into it, you know, cuts it, hurts it, affects it. Now, obviously, we think plant, okay? But it could also be the minerals, Henry was saying, right? So more importantly is that you're thinking dynamically, you're thinking in images, you're at that dimension. But remember, we also need a remedy that covers that, but ideally covers some of the strong keynotes as well, right? So if we could be flexible in our approach, the keynotes are really important. So if you just stay with those, that part of the case, and you try and fill in kingdom sensation, what about ill effects of that? What about vaccination? What about the ill effects of vaccination? What about getting sick all the time as a child? What about being cautious and being, you know, what about the nail biting? And that's sometimes where we go off in our prescription, because we go too fast into the kingdom, and you just forgot about all the keynotes. So if you're going to go to a plant, you need a plant ideally that covers those things. And that's going to, you know, so the other way to think is, what's a remedy for a child that covers those strong keynotes, addresses his as nature, methodical, cautious, timid, anxious, careful, and addresses that absorbing, everything absorbs. So what happens? So now if you, what happens with the sister? Mean words, absorb them. What happens with the vaccine? Absorb them. What happens with getting sick all the time? The environment, so he's weak. It's a weak constitution. He can't stand up firm. Right? He gets cut down easy. He's not firm. And so that's the hint for the mineral kingdom. So with these types of cases, kids' cases, I rely heavily on keynotes. And Sarah, you had that question, and that's what I mean. By keynotes, I mean strong symptoms. And this is what we talked about today, always thinking about the child. What are they susceptible to? What's the child's energy like? The etiology and the circumstances, very important, but it's not a cause and effect, as we know, because it's not a dualistic approach, but it is still very important. And since it's information, we can use it at that level, knowing that it's part of a bigger dynamic. So for example, the child, so if you wanted to repertorize a couple things, this is a case where I'd repertize vaccination, ill effects from vaccinations. And then try and see what in those remedies covers the rest of the case. And in a child's case, those are going to be your polycrests. And if you could start there, why not start there? Why would you go into the plants and get lost in the thousands of plant remedies? Or you say, oh, it sounds like pulsatilla, or it sounds like staff sec, or, you know, because it covers maybe that the hurts part. But they're not methodical. They're not cautious. They don't have ill effects from vaccine. It doesn't cover any of you the rest of the case. So ideally, you know, totality of symptoms is going to be your best way forward with classical homeopathy. So here, the strong keynotes were really key. And that's what I did. I opened my repertory with the larger case in mind, you know, What are the big remedies for children that bite nails? What are the big remedies for the ill effects of vaccines? And very importantly, what are the remedies for children that have low stamina? So I'm going to share a little short video about the remedy. And this is about the first aid use of the remedy. It's like 30 seconds. And it's from a wonderful teacher, Misha Norland. And he's got a lot of these really cool little videos, and he just talks about the energy of the remedy. You can find them online very easily. And here he's talking about just Cilicia, and mainly he's talking about them in first aid. But remember, anything in first aid tells us something deeply profound about the remedy. So let's see what he has to say about the remedy that the child got, which was Cilicia. And then I'll tell you how it relates to the rest of the case.
Silica is made from flint. And its most common usage in acute and first aid work is to stimulate the body to expel foreign objects, which could be as simple as a thorn that's got embedded in your toe or your hand, what have you, and it's been there for a few days, and it's slowly but not actively festering, and the remedy just helps that festering process to speed up, and you know, out will pop the thorn in a pocket of pus, and that'll be the end of the story. It'll heal over. I mean, that's an effective response to that situation, and the silica individual doesn't have the power to do that. So expulsive power is lacking. That's its most common first aid usage.
What a beautiful minute on the remedy. So now
it's made from flint.
Sorry about that.
And
so now, thinking in homeopathic terms, and those of you who've imagine If you're listening to Misha Norland speak, what's the dynamic in what he said? What are the words of motion?
Expelling.
Outward. Doesn't have expulsion power. So this, right? Expel. Outward. He can't get it out. What's the opposite of that? It goes in.
Absorb.
Absorbs. Absorbs fast, goes in, doesn't go out. It's all stuck. That's what happened. So Cilicia is it's one of the ways you can understand the remedy dynamically. And obviously you have seen this remedy over and over, and it's always helpful to see a case example. And the low stamina, things easily coming in, you know, is part of the whole dynamic state of the child. And so we learn a little bit about the remedy now in terms of when we use it in more chronic situations. As was said there, silica or cilicia is flint or crystal. It's one of the main components of glass. And this is from Rajan Sankaran, who says, it shows its quality of maintaining a specific shape of being inflexible. So breaking, but not bending. And it wants to stand hard and keep its shape at any cost. So if you imagine, there's no flexibility there, you know, and it's in the source of the remedy. So we have this inward outward dynamic and not being able to stand firm and everything gets absorbed. Okay. And so this is what we see is one way to understand the remedy as a whole. So in this case, what was really important was the mineral qualities of organization, order, even, you know, being fastidious at times that are very prominent in this remedy. This has to do with a little bit more what Henry was saying, you know, that being a mineral remedy, it's about their structure. And in Cilicia, it's row three happens to be about their identity. And what we know in terms, and this is from Kent, a famous quote from the homeopath Kent, who said that the patient lacks stamina. And this is fascinating. And this is in our Mish Materia Medica. And you'll see here him talking about the stalk of a grain in a field. And we have the themes of firmness and stamina versus not having firmness, not having stamina, which are key things in this case. So Cilicia, they lack firmness, they lack stamina, they lack that emotional or physical like grit. They're sensitive to everything. They can have frequent and reoccurrent infections. You can think of the cell salts that can be very supportive to children if you see that. The ill effects of vaccination, Cilicia is one of the huge remedies for that, of course. Particularly in kids, we see that they, on the one side, can be affectionate and refined, but also easily drained physically. That lack of stamina is key. They can be well-behaved, but also they could lack assertiveness. They could be spineless at times, timid, biting nails constantly, but especially when they're nervous, careful, cautious. This is the Cilicia child. When they're out of balance, they can lack confidence and be timid and yielding, but at the same time, they could also be the opposite. They could be obstinate and indignant, et cetera. And there's obviously your whole life to learn about Cilicia, but this is, you know, in some ways, Sarah had a question around, the keynotes, and you know, this is what I mean by the keynotes. So what's a remedy that, you know, those are the strong keynotes.
Did you want me to ask my question now, Adam, or?
Oh yeah, sorry. I
wasn't sure if that,
I thought that was the question.
I have like a specific question about keynotes, actually, because it's a way that you presented the case that I hadn't really looked at it that way before. But particularly with child cases, I find so often that's when the parents come, is because there's a particular thing like the nail biting, like there's something very present, you know. And I have a child case where it's chronic migraines and like OCD style behavior that's now creeping in. So my question is like, when, pardon?
How old is the child?
Around 10, okay. but the OCD behavior, first it was the chronic migraines. And then the OCD behavior has been like kind of creeping in now. It wasn't necessarily prominent before. So if I'm understanding it correctly, like it's all about the lack of adaptation, right? So that the keynotes can be that demonstration of almost how the child is not adapting. Maybe it can be a compensation. So my question is, can you, like, so if the keynotes, like let's say in my particular case where it would be the OCD behavior, would the question be beneficial to be like, when to better understand the depth of the case is like, when the child is exhibiting X behavior, what's happening? Like, when does that come on? Because that's going to start to give more window into their susceptibility, like what the potential, and then broaden out the case. Like I'm wondering, it's almost an order of doing things, which I wouldn't have necessarily done before, where I'm realizing the keynote can be such a big window as to what the susceptibility is, like what the triggers can be for that child.
Beautiful. I couldn't have said it better myself. Yes, for sure. The keynote is on the fact level. Remember in Sankaran's system, if we use that as our just general map, name, fact, feeling, delusion, sensation, source, energy, right? OCD, what level is that on? Name. How important is it? Just like anxiety, OCD, or whatever. It's just a name. So do we want it to go away? Yes. Do we want to see the child adapt better to it? Of course. So of course it's important, but without a broader understanding of it, you can't do anything with it, homeopathically speaking. So yes, for sure, whether it's nail biting, what is that? It's a name, it's a symptom. I used it. It was central. Cilicia is in the list for kids' remedy, a huge one, but that's not without the deeper understanding, well, why wouldn't I have just chosen one of the other 20 ones? So it's sort of like the migraines or it might be important, for example, to repertorize or to look up, you know, get a complete symptom, of course. But especially what would help you really know is what was going on in that child's life when that started. When does the child get the migraines? And I'd be more interested in what is the child having difficulty adapting to at that period or when the child gets the migraines than the migraines, but also not overlooking this, you know, the information of the migraine.
Yeah, because I think also it seems to be that this particular child does a lot of tapping, like, and the parents start to notice, they go, oh, it's a, you think there's like a certain thing that he does, but it's not consistent. So the thing that's interesting is what's happening in that day. What was the environment for him that day that required him to go into that name action, which is just, I agree, it's just a name, but what was like the terrain that would have required himself to feel like he's got to do that?
Very good. Now I'll just add one other thing. Because it's still very easy from what we just said to think in terms of cause and effect. So I'm just going to add in one other thing. You have the symptom, like let's say OCD, migraine. You have what was going on in the child's life or what, you know, et cetera. But if you stop there, you're in cause and effect. That's not homeopathy. Or let me rephrase that. What we encourage at Mish is to understand things in a more holistic way. And when you understand the bigger container, you can absolutely use that information. You can use all the data. You can think in those polarities. However, the one thing to add is who's the child? Who's the child? What is their energy? Is more, it gives you the framework to think holistically. And ultimately, that's what you need to include that. Because if you're just on those two top levels, it could be a little bit superficial. You can get confused. You know what I mean? So always in the context of like, let me put it another way. Parents come, they got a problem. Child's got a problem. Or else they're not coming. Generally. That's great. If you just focus on the problems and when they started, you have a one-sided case. So like in my case, for example, I want to know about the child. What does the child love? What is this energy like when he's happy? You know, how is he with other people? That has nothing to do with nail biting. That has nothing to do with his anger, or, you know, with it. So it's that level. So that's, I would say, like, if we just break it into like three levels, you know, there's going to be the problem. They're going to have a problem. There's going to be a name. It's going to be on the name fact level. You can easily get to the emotional level. You can easily get to the etiology level, circumstances level. And it's super important, obviously, a lot of strong keynotes there. But that has to be within the context of who's this child without those problems? And so that's sometimes what we forget to do. We just get so into the information and we got to fix the problem. At some point when cases, whether it's children or adults, I just say, forget about your problems. I don't want to hear about them no more. Tell me about you. Tell me about you or tell me about your child. And then you have a complete picture. Yeah. So that's the only other thing to add. Any other questions? Maybe a few more questions and then we'll wrap up.
Adam, when you were showing us your the keynotes and you had like children and then you had that's the child, were you using a specific repertory or something like Farouk or something like that?
Yeah, that's Farouk Mass. That is a common, yeah. I mean, so a couple things. You know, in terms of, yeah, so that I do use the Farouk Master children's book a lot. It's a wonderful book. Because you can look up those types of themes, like, oh, what are the cautious, careful children? What are those children? You know, there's obviously other books and other teachers who teach like that. That's one of them. Yeah, it's a good one. Sophie, you were asking, hi Sophie, you're asking, is there a good reference for children polycrust remedies? Yeah, the first thing is, yeah, definitely review. That's a really good question. Maybe I can post some things to the Google site, you know. I mean, the way that I think about it is, you know, the Froak Master, there's a couple other ones, obviously. And if you look, you know, that are really pediatric specific. Sometimes the way I think about it is a little bit more of just what are the main polycrusts and how does that look like for a child? The phosphorus child, siliceous, you know, what? And so the Froak Master is nice in that sense because he kind of gives you, I don't know how many remedies, just as an example, the 100 or so remedies that are very often used for children. And he's going to be speaking, you know, very commonly how the flavor of the child. Yeah, I think even if you just look at like, if you look that up and look at the table of contents, and those would be very common remedies for a child.
Adam, when did you recommend that me the Grand George book for children?
Yeah, did you find that helpful?
Yeah, I got it. The only thing is it stays only in the physical level. So
yeah, the Grand George, I mean, he's absolutely phenomenal pediatrician, French pediatrician, and homeopath, obviously in France, he's a French homeopath pediatrician, but you know, that's what I find. There's not, you got to use a number of different sources.
Yeah.
He also brings in the soul level. In this case, maybe I'll mention that a little bit. You know, if it's important, you can't use all the, how do I say that? Well, I guess I'll go back to what I said before. I tend to nowadays just kind of roll with the case. And is the soul, is that important in this case? Is the striving, is that, in this case, it didn't seem like what was presenting itself. That's not what was coming up, you know? And so in another case, if the parent says, you know, my child is just so competitive, they have to be the best. They're so like, I don't know what is driving that. Like, you know, everything we try, the child is just, and he gets this and that. Oh, and that sounds a little bit more like possibly like a striving case, you know? What is that child striving for? What is that competitiveness all about? Then I'm going to use that kind of thinking, use that kind of map. But I'm not going to just try and use all the maps all the time. That just leads to a lot of confusion. So that's where you just kind of need to be a little bit flexible and let the case tell you what map to use. And if you don't know, just take the case and at the end, it should be apparent.